So moving on to item six on our continuing agenda, it's going to be our review of the total portfolio performance for the period ending September 30, 2022. That was a quarter to remember. I know. A little gallows humor there. All right. So it looks like I want to make sure we have Tim and Scott Whalen coming over. So let's see. Get everybody either Scott. Good morning.
Good morning, everyone.
Looking. Oh, there's Mr. Price. I finally found him. My boxes moved for some reason. There you are. Good morning, Tim. So let's take up item six. Looks like we've got everybody present and accounted for. So, Tim, how would you do you want to kick it off, or do you want Scott to do that?
We're going to start with Mr. Whalen. Go over the third quarter performance.
Fair enough.
Hello, everyone. I hope everyone is enjoying a good holiday season and had a nice Thanksgiving. I am going to start, as I typically do, with comments on the economic environment, the investment landscape, and then move into performance. And with respect to the economic environment, there's been a lot going on since the last time I presented performance at the end of the second quarter. The economic landscape and the market environment has remained largely the same, though. That is, with heightened risk and heightened volatility, really driven by a couple of large factors, macroeconomic and geopolitical factors. I'll talk about the economy first and then move into geopolitical risks. I'm really just going to make some comments here and leave my face up on the screen. And then afterwards, I'll respond to some questions if there are any, and also maybe take you to a few pages in the deck, and I'll share my screen at that time. But first, I just want to really talk about what's going on in the economy. You guys are probably all aware of the cause and effect that's going on with respect to stubborn inflation, leading to the Fed and other central banks raising rates to try and get it under control. Really, since the end of last year, when the word transitory sort of left everybody's presentation lexicon and they forgot about that word and started getting more concerned about sustained inflation. So the Fed started raising rates. There were zero. You think about the Fed funds rate, right? One of the primary tools in the Fed's toolbox. It was zero at the beginning of the year. And then after six hikes, the Fed funds rate is approaching 4%. Now and expecting to move up from there, probably dropping down in terms of the magnitude of the hike from 75% for the last couple, 75 basis points for the last couple, probably down to 50 basis points, maybe on the December 15th meeting. Chairman of the Fed, Chairman Powell, will be speaking today, actually in just a few minutes. And the expectation is that he will hint at that's slowing the pace of those rate hikes going forward. And then, so six rate hikes, getting the Fed funds rate to 4%, the 10-year treasury rate, another benchmark rate, has moved up from about 1.5% at the beginning of the year. It went up to above 4% and is now back down around 3.7. So significant rate hikes, right? Trying to bring inflation back under control. And really, the expectation is that it's going to lower economic activity, as one would expect. Rising rates, cost of everything goes up in terms of doing business, and slowing economic activity. Thinking about economic slowdown, we had a couple of negative quarters of GDP in the first and second quarter of this year, following significant growth coming out of the COVID downturn, but a couple of negative quarters. You probably remember all the chatter about whether we were in a technical recession or not. It got a little bit politicized. In the third quarter, GDP actually grew at 2.6% rate. But that sounds like a big jump, but really not showing great strength in the economy. That 2.8% of that 2.6% was actually due to change in exports versus imports, right? Change in net exports and other elements of the economy really were sort of slowing down and bringing it back down to that 2.6%. So not a lot of stuff to get excited about in that 2.6 number. And then looking forward, the expectations are to very flat or slightly negative growth out into 2023. So the expectation is that those rising rates will slow the economy down. And really now, today, we've seen some evidence of that. A couple of indicators came out this morning with the ADP jobs report showing that the increase in jobs out there is starting to come down and a little bit below expectations for the month. And also the job openings report that came out today, the JOLTS report, was below or starting to trend down after a sort of a surprise uptick in the month of September. So with that, I'll sort of pause on the economic landscape and outlook before jumping into geopolitical risks, see if there's any questions or comments.
Any questions for Scott on the general state of dismalcy? Not seeing any hands up.
So thinking about geopolitical risks, the two big ones are out there with respect to Russia's invasion of Ukraine, showing no signs of abating. And of course, that has inflationary pressures, given the fact that a huge amount of energy and a huge amount of food in the global food and energy supply chain come out of that region. So continuing inflationary pressures from there. And then similarly, well, different but similar to inflation in China, and the COVID lockdowns are having inflationary effects. You know, of course, China being a large part of global manufacturing output, and the China lockdowns and the supply chain impacts there. Not to mention, you know, sort of the big tail risk of China's desire to become a bigger player on the world stage, and the risks of what's going on there with Taiwan, and you know, just their desire to be a bigger player, and our desire to, you know, sort of fight them for global hegemony. So those tail risks, combined with the supply chain risks, both in China and Russia, continue to be, you know, sort of outsized risks on the global stage. So in this environment, interestingly, traditional diversification has not really paid off. You think about stocks and bonds, oftentimes moving opposite from one another, and bonds providing that nice anchor to windward to any equity market drawdown. It hasn't really been happening because as rates rise, that impacts bonds. And what I'll show you in a moment is that bonds have been hit this year almost as much as stocks have. Another interesting point is, you know, we've seen a rebound in risk markets and equity markets recently as concerns about inflation maybe have abated a little bit as some surprising, not hugely surprising, but surprisingly positive numbers have come out on the inflation front. The Fed has responded to that by continuing to talk tough on inflation, wanting to maintain their credibility. But the market has said, okay, well, you know, if inflation is coming down, maybe the Fed can take their foot off the brake a little bit and will slow down in terms of the rate increases. And the market's responded favorably to that. The interesting thing about that is the market is really right now discounting the rate rises pretty effectively. And there's been an orderly decline in equity valuations as rates have risen and future cash flows are discounted back at a higher rate. But the market has yet to really discount in any earnings slowdown. So earnings forecasts, earnings continue to come in relatively strongly, and earnings forecasts have not really factored in a major slowdown. So the market is still discounting a soft landing. It will soon be seen whether the market is correct in that or not. But if we do see a big hit to earnings You can expect sort of another leg down in equity valuations.
Hey, Scott, before you move on, I just had a quick question. In the last several days, there were widespread news reports about the protests in China about the lockdown. And it was a widely reported incident at the Foxconn factory and so forth. And what I wanted to ask you about, though, was that there were at least one or two articles that I quickly looked at gave some indication that current disruption in the markets was due in part to the presence of those protests. In other words, adding to uncertainty. And I wondered if that was true. In other words, how would we know that? And do we have any data or economic indicators that would indicate any truth to that assertion? I guess
that's funny, right? The market is really good at assigning narratives to market movements, and you never know. But yesterday, the Chinese stock market jumped considerably. I think it was above 5% across the major Chinese indices, and China being the tail that wags the emerging market dog, right? There, I think they're about 30% of the total emerging market index. Emerging market equities was up about 2.5% yesterday, somewhere in that neighborhood. And I think that was the result, or the narrative was that's the result of China really being able to get a handle on these protests, and you know, it's not going to blow up the nation. You know, an interesting thing about China is, God, they are frighteningly good at controlling their population, right? I mean, they have facial recognition. They know who's at these protests. They're calling people and saying, hey, you know, you're out there. You better not be out there again. So it's just, you know, scary in terms of, you know, sort of lack of freedoms, but in terms of the protests blowing up into something that is going to really lead to the destabilization. Personally, I think that's really not a huge likelihood.
Yeah, and I had the same reaction. I just, you know, as only the modern era can do, it took that situation as soon as there was video footage, right? Anything tangible that could be distributed on the internet, it was there within a millisecond, and then all the speculation occurs. But I was really reacting to the idea that you could attribute market volatility in the past, and I'm only talking the past 3 or 4 days, right, associated with that. And I questioned whether that was really honest or truthful or
even. Yeah, I don't know. I think there's probably something to it, but to your point, it's probably the market sort of overreacting based on the news that's coming out of China.
I'd like to think that isn't institutional investors, but I would, you know, I have no way of knowing that, right?
So getting back to the point on diversification, you know, stocks and bonds have not been good diversifiers.
If I can interrupt, I think I've got my hand up. It's supposed to be up there, but
don't see it. Go ahead.
Really? Okay. It says my hand has been raised. If I could ask Scott, there seems to be, this is Jerry, and you can read all about my technical difficulties in my upcoming life story. It'll be out in print next week.
All right, so, I can't wait.
There's 3 or 4 chapters on technology and how it can't be used by me, but that's okay. All right. Question, there seems to be, I guess any administration does this, but this administration seems to now be grasping at straws by saying, look at the market, especially look at sales, look at the Black Friday and the Cyber Monday and how great those sales were. I don't know if anybody else is concerned, but my guess is that virtually all of that is on a credit card, which means that next year we're going to be looking at phenomenal debt headwinds for the average consumers. Do you have any thoughts on that?
So I do. And net savings is definitely coming down, coming out of COVID, where, you know, the federal government just pushed tons of liquidity out there really to prop up an economy that was in a tailspin. And of course that has run out, and there's indications that consumer spending has remained pretty robust, and at the same time, net savings is coming down. So that sort of validates your comment. So
that was not my dog.
And I don't have a dog here at work either. So back to just to close up the comment on diversification. So stocks and bonds not really providing the diversification benefits that they often do and that you would expect over time during this period. And, you know, fortunately, there have been other asset classes that have been providing some protection, and you have reasonable or meaningful exposure to those asset classes, primarily real assets in your real estate portfolio. And other private markets have been providing some protection as well. Although, you know, possibly cold comfort there as private markets catch up with public markets, you may see some valuation, downward valuation adjustments there in coming quarters. And I guess with that, I will pause for questions before moving to just a couple of pages in the deck and before getting to performance.
Any further questions or comments for Scott?
One other quick question, if I could. This is Jerry again. You know, the companies themselves like to refer to euphemistically to right-sizing. We're seeing a lot of it in the technology field right now, I mean, significant right-sizing. And that, to me, looks to be something that we should be probably concerned about in the upcoming months, year. And in addition to that, I saw an article recently, which didn't surprise me at all, about the challenges to real estate, particularly commercial real estate. And so I wonder if you have any thoughts both on continued right-sizing, layoffs by companies, and also the impact that you see from your perspective on especially commercial real estate.
Yeah, of course, I have thoughts. You can take them for what they're worth. The right-sizing, you know, it hasn't really shown up big in the numbers. So I see the same headlines you do with pretty big layoffs in, big headline, well-known tech companies. But if you look at, so there is, first of all, if you look at the unemployment rate, it went from 3.5 to 3.7% over the last couple of months. So still, very low by historical standards. And then, you know, you are seeing some impacts, as I mentioned earlier, the ADP jobs numbers, which essentially measures all current jobs, the number of current jobs in the economy. And it grew by, I think it was 124,000 last month, which was down from 190,000 the month before, down relative to expectations of 190,000 and down relative to the prior month. So it is, the employment picture is slowing, but not dramatically so. And then the jolts, the job openings, that also came down after a surprise jump, but it was down less than expected. So, you know, a little bit of conflicting evidence there. We're going to get the non-farm payrolls number, I think, tomorrow, which is similar to the ADP report and shows, you know, just jobs out there. So that'll be another indicator. But it's not falling off a cliff, Jerry, but to your point, it is, you know, it is sort of slowing down in response to what the Fed is trying to do. And then with respect to real estate, that in my mind is a big, big question out there. Parts of real estate continue to do well. Multifamily housing, that is apartments, light industrial, think, Amazon fulfillment centers, in the inner city and surrounding suburbs, you know, sort of warehouses and other light industrial, other types of sectors like medical buildings, data hubs, data centers are doing well. And actually even retail is coming back off of its lows, its problems that it's had over the last 5 to 10 years. What is the big question mark is office, and particularly, sort of like inner city, big office buildings. One data point anecdotally, I was in Chicago in my hotel room on, I don't know, it was like the 16th floor or something. And I was looking out my window at the big office building right across the street. And I was there for 4 days. And during that 4 day period, it looked like that office building was about 15% occupied throughout the entire week. And that to me is just like, how can you repurpose millions upon millions of inner city A-class office space to something else? They've done a pretty good job of repurposing a lot of the retail, but I wonder how you repurpose big A-class office buildings. And you know, when those leases start coming up, what's going to happen to all that space? I just don't know. We even here at Varis are trying to figure out how to address, you know, the hybrid work from home, work at work situation. And in my office, we've got 75% of the space that is open most of the time. So it seems like a big challenge. I'm not sure how people are going to address it. You know, I've asked real estate managers over time, what do you think about this? And a lot of them have said, oh, you know, they're going to figure it out. They're going to figure out how to repurpose it, et cetera, et cetera. And a couple have said it's going to be an absolute disaster. So that's an interesting question, Jerry, and I don't have an answer for you.
Hey, Scott, what is our exposure to office space through our private equity holdings?
I don't have that number off the top of my head. I'll see if Tim does, and if not, I can certainly get back to you on that.
David, I don't have that. I mean, it's significant. It's in our legacy exposures, but it had been declining for years going into COVID. So, you know, give me a few minutes, I can scrounge it up. But, you know, it'd been on the decline.
One of the interesting things in this article, and reminds me of that old saying about it's an ill wind that blows no good. It suggested that in repurposing older buildings, that seemed to be a niche market right now for investments. The existing buildings that are relatively new are, as you described them, Scott, see-through buildings. And people that are, in fact, renewing their leases, if they're doing that, are renewing with considerably less space taken down. But always looking for those green shoots somewhere, I guess there's still something to be said for older buildings that are being repurposed for whatever use is coming up. Fascinating article, and not surprising at all.
If I can jump in as well on first on office, some of the SACR speakers clearly said be careful of office buildings in terms of being one of the REIT type categories. But my sort of asking you to expand, Scott, is on global and international. You touched on it, but everything I see suggests that global international is getting higher, more risky, more potential problems. U.S. being a more safe place to put money, international, global being less safe. We have lots in international, global. Any thoughts about any direction trends we ought to be going to at this point?
So we're going to, Tim has asked us to pardon me. Tim has asked us to take a hard look at that through the upcoming strategic asset allocation section. And so that will likely be an area of focus when we come back and talk to you during the first part of next year. I don't really have anything to provide you with now over and above what you see in the press, other than to say my standard refrain that is, markets are discounting mechanisms. And so any risks that are known and forecasted should be in current valuations. And then of course, international provides diversification relative to domestic, but stay tuned and there'll be more on this later.
Thank you, stay away from Barbados.
Okay. Thank you. Now I got to change my holiday vacation plan. Just kidding. Okay. So unless there are any further questions, I'd just like to take you to a couple of slides in the deck, and I'll share my screen. I'll go through this quickly, but please feel free to stop me if you have any questions or comments. So, and all this just sort of punctuates the comments that I made. This slide is a little bit dated. I'll give you some updated statistics here, but you can see kind of the slowdown in GDP, the indicators, the key indicators here, GDP, inflation, rates, and employment. You can see the slowdown in GDP from the prior 12 months, which was, you know, amazingly high, but amazingly high digging out of that big COVID dip that we took.
Hey, Scott?
Yes, sir.
I was having a Jack Nicholson moment in One Flew, where you're describing something that none of us can see, which is great. Ah, there you are. Now you're sharing. You weren't sharing before.
I didn't click the last button I needed to click. Sorry.
There you go. All right. Go ahead.
So here we are, 12.5 months, 12.5% for the 12 months prior, right? And then 1.6% for the last year. And as I mentioned, you know, quarter over quarter on an annualized basis, we dipped below negative for a couple of quarters. We're back positive, and with the expectation that things going out moving forward are going to be pretty flat to slightly negative. Inflation, very high. And I think over the last year, the monthly year-over-year inflation didn't dip below 7.5%, went up as high as, I think it was like 9.1. Now it's starting to trail down, but it takes a while. And monthly inflation rates are still coming in at, you know, 4.4%, annualizing to, you know, 5-ish. So we're still well above the Fed target of 2-ish. So, you know, we would expect the Fed to continue to chip away at that by continuing to raise rates. Expected inflation. So this is interesting, right? This says that the market is expecting the Fed's policies, the Fed tightening, to work, because out into the future, the market is pricing inflation in around that 2% target. I think the latest print as of a couple of days ago was 2.3%, but still, you know, low relative to current inflation. Fed funds target, as I mentioned, it's up now after that last 75 basis point increase. It's up to, the range is 3.75 to 4. It'll go up to probably 4.25 to 4.75. I think that the Fed has made indications that they are going to take it up to 5 to 5.5. So, you know, continuing to move forward, obviously they continue to be data dependent, but that's their expectation today, notwithstanding Chairman Powell's comments that he's probably making right now. The 10-year rate, as I mentioned, quite a bit higher than it was just a year ago, went up to above 4, back down around to this 3.8. I think it's a 3.7 now. And then unemployment, as I mentioned, ticked up from 3.5 to 3.7%, the latest print. I'm going to pull forward, make a couple of comments. Let's see, I'm going to skip over that one and that one. Bear with me, please. I'll go to equity valuations all the way back to slide 36. So, you know, I've come to you in past quarters and talked to you about how remarkably expensive equities are, kind of price for perfection. As you know, equities have come down fairly significantly and bounced around a little bit. But you can see these PE ratios, right? Price to earnings ratios, which is really just the valuation metric that says how expensive are stocks relative to their earnings. And as one would expect, as rates rise, you got to discount those earnings back at a higher rate, which means that the price is going to come down. Across U.S., you know, this may be interesting to John's point, U.S. Cheaper valuations, international developed, Europe, Australia, and developed Eastern nations in the orange, and then the emerging markets in the green. So still expensive, but, you know, maybe for good reason, even cheaper and maybe for good reason. In terms of the outlook and the forecast. And then lastly, I'll take you back to the last page of the landscape just to give you kind of a sense of all the red out there. And this goes to the diversification point. You can see the last year. So equities here, domestic and international, you can see all the red and the big double digit drawdowns. And then even fixed income here, if you look at the long treasury, so the 30-year treasury, this is a, you know, risk-free in terms of getting paid back. You know that the U.S. government, or hopefully the U.S. government, is going to pay you back, down nearly 30% year to date, all due to interest rate increases. So sort of a record down year for bonds and government bonds in particular. And then you did see, you know, a little bit of diversification, as I mentioned, in real assets, commodities here, up 13.6% year to date, trailed down a little bit recently as, you know, sort of energy commodities topped, industrial metals, precious metals topped. And yeah, that's about it. I guess maybe one quick comment on the dollar or foreign currencies. The dollar has been super strong through this environment, you know, sort of flight to safety and expectations about U.S. strength relative to the rest of the world. Strong dollar has put even more downward pressure on international investments denominated in local currencies. And with that, I will pause and see if there are any questions before jumping to performance.
I don't see any hands up, Scott. So I think you're safe to move forward to performance.
Thank you for your patience as we covered all that stuff. And I'll take you to this slide, which really, so this portfolio reconciliation really sort of encapsulates the bad news that you and all other institutional investors have been experiencing this year. The year to date, so this is through 9/30, you can see you started the year at $11.5 billion, you know, minimal net cash flow, and then this big investment change, $1.6 billion, taking you down to below $10 billion, sadly. You can see the last 3 months, you were above that 10 positive net cash flow, but again, the investment change having a negative impact, getting you down to that same $9.9 billion.
Scott, excuse me for interrupting, but if you could let me know what page you're on. I can't follow your slide presentation, but I've got it on another source. Okay. So what page are you reading from?
I'm on page 52.
Thank you.
And the portfolio reconciliation, and I'm jumping now to page 54. Just a quick note, you know, sort of a fiduciary check on where you are relative to your policy allocations. So you can see, you know, you have the current targets and your long-term targets that were set and expected to get to over the long-term. Interestingly, you can see now as you're well into the functionally focused portfolio implementation, your current target and your long-term targets are very close and you are in line with both. So just looking at the current targets, you're a little bit underweight in your growth portfolio, liquidity, diversifying, and right on top of it. And then cash, you know, which is the contributions coming in, you and money that you get back from your income, you get from your investments, your private market investments. And then that's overlaid right in line with the rest of the risk profile of the rest of your portfolio. So essentially right on top of your policy targets. And then I'll move to performance. And, you know, here I want to pause and make a comment about the last time we met. You may recall that we expressed some concern last quarter regarding fairly significant underperformance relative, at least in my mind, to expectations. And you can see that reflected sort of in the longer term numbers here, looking at year to date and 1 year relative to your policy index. So what we did was I went to our risk group and asked them to put together a detailed attribution model and dig into where that was really coming from to see if there were any concerns, you know, systemic issues that we needed to think about and address. And I'm going to come back to you at your December 15th meeting or December 14th board meeting with that detailed explanation. But I can, you know, the punchline now is there was nothing systemic. It was, you know, some underperformance by your international equity managers, and it was encapsulated into a short period of time, short time window there, a benchmark issue relative to private equity, and, you know, sort of some technical stuff associated with your overlay. So we'll dig into that more in a couple of weeks, but I just wanted to give you that sort of foreshadowing and let you know that we did take a look at it, and there's no real systemic issues that need to be addressed in our opinion at this point. And then you can also see that the performance has reverted and come back to normal and expectations relative to your benchmark this quarter. So good news there, and really across your three sub portfolios: growth, diversifying, and liquidity.
Hey Scott, a quick question for you.
Please.
When you come back with the detailed attribution mid-December, can you also give a sense of what the kind of active risk of the portfolio is relative to policy? So kind of looking at the one-year number, that's 3%. Is that, you know, is that like a couple standard deviation type event or what? If you could place that into context, that'd be great.
Yes, can do. And then, so thanks for that. And then I did want to point out this adjusted policy, and this gets to that policy index. We added that this year and this, or this quarter, and this gets to that notion of the private markets policy in or private markets benchmark impact. So just real briefly, you may recall that back in 2021, I think it was right at the midpoint of the year, we recommended to the board that you change the policy, that you change the way you track your private markets in this report to say, you know, it's going to be up and down. There'll be not great reasons for the tracking error there. Let's just benchmark it against itself. We also at that time said, you know, let's just do it on a go forward basis and not change the whole history. Well, that it was that factor, the not changing the whole history, that really caused some tracking error, unintended. And so what we've done with this adjusted policy index is we have, in fact, changed the history. And so you can see that the impact lessens as you go back in time relative to your policy index. And I'll explain this again more when we meet in a couple of weeks. But if you look at your total fund relative to the policy, it's quite a bit higher. The difference is quite a bit higher than relative to the adjusted policy. The adjusted policy just says, when we made that change, we made it all the way back into history. So it would just be consistent. And it wasn't like you just had the change as of June 30th, 2021. So kind of a little bit of a technical detail there, but thought you might find that worth noting.
Well, I actually remember discussing that when we talked about benchmarking, and that we had at least at the time consciously said, well, that was then and this is now and going forward, right? So we were going to try to draw a bright line, but yep. When you do that, you lose the ability to do a 10-year or a 5-year look back, right, to try to see what trend lines look like. So I guess this is that adjustment, right?
Yeah, and interestingly, right, the intent was to reduce tracking error, but the fact that we cut it at the point that we did and what markets did, both public and private, during that point that we cut it actually increased historical tracking error. So this helps to kind of adjust that. Okay, so I've just got a little bit further to go here. The wall of numbers. And, you know, I'm not going to take you through much detail here, but you can see most of your managers for the last quarter have performed within expectations. And you can just kind of look down both at the composites, so total fund, and then the growth, diversifying, and liquidity composites on top of their benchmarks. And most of the managers in pretty good shape relative to their benchmarks and relative to peers. So nothing really to call out here. I'm just going over the numbers so that you can see them and know that you're back in pretty good shape relative to the concerns that we had last quarter. And
it's probably good these are in black and white, though. I concluded that going through the deck.
Okay, good. I can, with that, I will, again, thank you for your patience, pause for questions, and complete my report.
All right. Thank you, Scott. Are there any further questions or comments for Scott? Doesn't look like any, so we'll look forward to your report on December 14th. I think that's going to be of interest. All right. Well, thank you, Scott.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks. So, Mr. Price, the floor is yours.
Thank you. Let me pull this up briefly here. You're going to have to let me know if this is working because we've had some strange issues going on with the screen share lately. So can everybody see the memo there?
We can. It's not large.
Yeah.
I don't know if that can be increased at all. Better. Yeah, that's clearly better. Yes.
Okay.
For the record, I have nothing to do with it. I had nothing to do with it.
Thank you.
Trustee Holcomb is excused from the technical difficulties here. So let me step through this memo briefly. Just a reminder for everybody, this is the memo that basically takes a little bit of a removed look and says, you know, we have a very complex portfolio. However, we have three functionally focused sub-portfolios. If each one of those was implemented simply, what would we have done? And then we can measure ourselves accordingly and say, was all the complexity worth it? And I continue to note that, yes, we are outperforming a simple target index, but we'll step through each one of the sub-portfolios individually and talk about the goals and progress towards those goals here. So I'm going to move to page 3, which is just kind of the report card page on each one of the sub-portfolios. Again, comment briefly that the liquidity sub-portfolio, which is short duration fixed income, intended to match 3 years of benefit payments, is continuing to perform as expected. The number of months of benefit payments are there in reserve. This is largely a buy and maintain portfolio. So you're going to see mark-to-market losses. For the most part, we do not trade around those. And so, you know, those we expect to get paid back par. Obviously, this is shorter duration and higher quality. So we are expecting little to no loss in this portfolio, but we will see the mark-to-market movement around that. But I think importantly, from our perspective, the quality remains high. We're at AA-. The duration remains short at 2 years. You will note when we get into some of the individual managers, and more notably next quarter, that folks who had mortgages, the duration on those extended just because of rates rising and refinancing not happening. But that's, you know, the nature of the bonds hasn't changed. The measurement of duration has changed. Within the growth portfolio, this is the big dominant engine. And we take a look at this over 5 years. We are meeting expectations there, both on an absolute and relative basis. We also take a look at this on a Sharpe ratio basis versus a global equity index, and we have a superior rate of return there as well. I would echo some of Scott's comments that private markets are embedded here. We may have a time lag delay there, so take this with a little bit of a grain of salt, but we'll see how this shakes out over the next few quarters if we maintain that return premium versus just, you know, a global equity index. But right now, we are seeing that premium show up. And lastly is our risk diversifying portfolio, which tends to be where we have more challenges. We are seeing, you know, these measurements are over 5 years. And so the changes we've made over the past year, you know, 20% of those changes is manifested in these 5-year numbers. We'll take a look at some shorter term numbers as well. But over the 5 years, we're still seeing that correlation to the growth portfolio be higher than expected. Over the 1 and 3 year period, that has declined significantly. The 5-year real return, so net of inflation, is negative. The nominal return is at zero. Neither of those numbers are in line with expectations. But again, the changes that we've made over the past year should be start to show up in terms of positive positive growth towards our goals and a higher absolute return in that portfolio. Let me take you to the individual manager pages. I'm going to go, or individual sub portfolio pages. I'm going to go through these fairly quickly because there's not a whole lot of change from last quarter. Again, the liquidity sub portfolio, everything's pretty much in the green. You will see that asset growth is down at a firm wide level, pretty much across the board. That's reflective of market conditions more than anything else there. Nothing of note here other than with particularly within the SIT portfolio, which is made up largely of government guaranteed mortgages. The duration has extended a bit there, but nothing out of line with expectations. If I go to slide 5 and 6, this takes a look at our growth oriented portfolios. Again, you see product asset growth and firm asset growth all in the negatives, again, reflective of market conditions more than anything else here. I think, you know, the two that jump out at you as deviations from the crowd would be First Eagle's asset growth being positive, as well as Allianz. These are both organizations that have done restructurings in the past year. First Eagle has done some acquisitions. Allianz has been, you know, largely sold off as a new unit. And it's been, you know, reconstituted. So take those with a little bit of a grain of salt. There's things going on in the background. It's not organic growth. On slide 6, I would say domestic equity, generally good 5- and 10-year results in line with our expectations there. Really, really difficult 1-year results as we all just heard from Verus. International equity, a bit more of a challenge, and this is where the dollar strength is having pressure, but you also have earnings and GDP pressure in Europe, and certainly some valuation pressure coming out of Asia. So we still continue to see the Pierford and William Blair, the developed markets managers, in line with expectations, but, you know, barely in terms of, you know, their benchmark. I would say the managers are delivering relative to the benchmark. The space has been challenged. And this goes to John Phillips' comment from earlier. I think, you know, you're just seeing a whole lot of challenges around the world right now from a U.S. investor perspective. We do note that both emerging market managers we have marked as not meeting expectations. Again, that's not reflective of the managers. It's reflective of the emerging market space. And I think that's something we're going to be taking a look at more carefully. I've asked Verus to do a bit deeper dive on emerging markets, particularly in light of the outsized allocation of China within emerging markets and, you know, what that's doing to overall results. You know, it is interesting. Scott noted that, you know, China markets rallied 5% yesterday. In the month of November, China markets are up close to 25%. There has been a tremendous rally in there. They're still down 30% year to date, but you've seen a lot of volatility. That volatility can be to the upside or downside. Right now, so far in the fourth quarter, we're seeing it to the upside. But, you know, I read that as volatility, not, you know, great organic results. Global equity, as you would expect, kind of right in the middle of international and developed. U.S. and international developed and in line with expectations there. Real estate, kind of a little bit of a mixed bag, and certainly high yield with Allianz and risk parity with AQR and Panagora. Again, a little bit more challenged space there, but in line with expectations, but again, not great overall results. I think the saving grace right now is the private markets. We're seeing private equity coming at 14%. Time-weighted rate of return over 10 years. That's a great result. We're going to have Stepstone here later on today to talk about both, you know, historical performance and outlook going forward. But, you know, I do think that private equity and private credit allocation has been something we've spent a lot of time and energy on over the past 5 and 6 years. And it's showing up in terms of a really solid contribution to total fund and to the growth portfolio results.
You're here. Ditto. Yeah. No doubt.
No doubt. Let me take you to slide. Okay, I have a frozen screen. Hang on. I'm going to take you to slide 9 on risk diversifying. And as we noted, you know, a challenge space, but I think the changes that we made over the past year are going to start to show up in terms of a more positive result. We saw that 5-year correlation being quite high at 0.8. You take a look at the 1 and 3 year, and we've dropped back down largely into the, you know, close to zero range. So we think those results and the manager changes we've made there are going to start to show up in terms of longer term results. We think they were the right changes there. We are taking a look at another strategy, hopefully in the first half of next year, to bring into this. And I think at 4 to 5 strategies, we're probably largely stocked in this space. But, you know, this is an area where we continue to do some additional work. And, you know, we recognize that there is more to be done there, but I think, you know, we are trending in the right direction. With that, I'll go to slide 10 and talk about total fund results. And again, this just measures upside versus downside. We want the blue line to be above the red line. We want to capture more of the upside and less of the downside. That spread has been maintained. You know, I think it is narrowed, but we continue to capture more of the upside and less of the downside. So that is in keeping with our expectations for how the total fund should behave. And then lastly, on slide 11, on a quarterly attribution, we added about 130 basis points there. For any of the eagle-eyed trustees, you'll note that on that quarterly attribution, it shows negative 4.1, but we just talked about a negative 3.5% return. This is a buy and hold number. So this is if you did nothing, but we rebalanced during the quarter. So the rebalancing added some value as well. But even at that, you know, we did see excess returns through the portfolio. And if we take a look at this on a risk adjusted basis, so returns versus standard deviation versus that simple target index, you know, at 9:30, if we take a look back over the 1, 3, 5, and 10 year periods, returns are all higher, the volatility is lower. So the risk adjusted returns are superior across all those time periods. And that is what we're looking for there. So even in this era of volatility and challenges, tremendous challenges, we're still seeing total fund expectations being met largely, with some areas that we know we need a little bit more of attention. And I'll wrap up my comments there and see if there's any trustee comments or questions.
Any questions or comments for Tim? I'm looking, I don't see any hands up. So I think we're good. Thank you, Tim.
Okay.